horrific and unimaginable at all levels.
Like all the other Gazans, many Palestinian journalists in the besieged district have been killed brutally by the Israeli bombardments. And those who are still alive continue to suffer from the unlivable conditions in the region. Mati Abu Msabih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has slammed Israel's assassination of senior Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps advisor Sayyid Radi Mousawi in Syria. Hezbollah called it a flagrant and brazen attack and a transgression of borders. Deputy head of Hezbollah's executive council told Press TV that General Qasem Soleimani had predicted that Sayyid Razi would be assassinated in the battle to liberate al-Quds.
His martyrdom was only a matter of time. He was a man who had spent his youth on sacrifice. He was always ready to offer whatever assistance was needed to the resistance groups. This assassination will not stop the path which Sayyid Radi al-Mousawi has opened for us. It will not stop us and other resistance groups in the region from continuing to walk in this path. We will remain on the battlefield to face this enemy which is occupying and looting our land. And with the blessing of the martyrs, the future will witness a new victory for the resistance in Gaza and the region.
Palestinian resistance factions Hamas and Islamic Jihad also said in a statement that the assassination of Brigadier General Radi Mousawi on Syrian territory is a crime and a cowardly act that threatens security and stability in the region. The Palestinian resistance groups lauded Sayyid Radi for his role in supporting the resistance in Palestine.
We know that he was very close to General Qasem Soleimani and therefore worked closely with the Palestinian resistance groups and all resistance groups in the region. His efforts were based on the same school of thought as General Soleimani, and he walked in the same path which they had opened together. Today, we can see the result of these efforts in Gaza and the West Bank.
The Iranian cultural advisor in Beirut said General Mousawi was considered as a man who devoted his life to the Palestinian cause and finally sacrificed it for the sake of al-Quds.
Sayyid Radi Mousawi, God bless his soul, was one of the great leaders in the IRGC who devoted his life to support the honorable resistance in the region, especially in Lebanon and Palestine. Therefore, he is a part of every blessed bullet or rocket that is being fired to target the criminal Zionist regime, whether in Palestine or Lebanon.
Sayyid Radi is now seen as a regional leader and martyr, just as General Soleimani. He is regarded by many as a martyr in the long battle for the liberation of al-Quds. On the martyrdom anniversary of General Qasem Soleimani, the resistance front has bid farewell to another leader. Sayyid Radi Mousawi's role in supporting the resistance groups of Lebanon and Palestine was significant. However, for the resistance, martyrdom is another form of divine victory. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has vowed to take tough revenge on Israel for assassinating a senior Iranian military advisor in Syria. IRGC spokesman Ramazan Sharif made this statement during a press conference held in the Iranian capital, Tehran. He blasted the Monday Israeli missile attack on Damascus that targeted Brigadier General Sayyid Razi Mousavi's residence in the Sayyid Zainab neighborhood. He also described the assassination as a continuation of Israel's violation of international laws, calling on the international community to stop the crimes of the occupying regime, which endanger international peace and security. When asked about Tel Aviv's motive for committing this heinous crime, Sharif said the regime is seeking to expand its genocidal onslaught on Gaza to the entire West Asia region.
One of the reasons is that the Israeli regime wants to extend the scope of the war beyond the borders of Palestine, and they want to deflect public attention from the Gaza war. The second point, which is important, is that the Israelis try to show off their aerial dominance. Maybe these are the two main reasons because of which the assassination was committed.
The IRGC spokesman warned that Israel must wait for a direct or indirect response as Iran reserves the right to counter the Israeli assassination. He added the martyrdom of the Iranian commander will usher in a new era where the Zionist regime will be the loser. Sharif also touched upon the U.S. support for Israel, saying Washington is violating international law by funding and backing the regime's crimes in Gaza.
Definitely, one of their strategies has been to change the Israel-Palestine conflict to Iran-America conflict. But as the wise leader of the Islamic Revolution said on the first day of the Al-Aqsa flood operation, this operation was launched by Palestinians against Israelis, and the U.S. support for Israel is the reason why the regime continues to exist.
Brigadier General Sayed Razi Mousavi was martyred by Israel while on an advisory mission in Syria.
Truth never dies, and today it's livelier than ever as the world is observing the Israeli crimes with open eyes, conscious minds, and bleeding hearts. No matter what the Israeli regime and its supporters do to divert the global community's attention from its aggression on Gaza, the whole world are unanimously calling for justice for Palestinians. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Syrian military, religious parliamentary and popular delegations, along with resistance representatives, visited the Iranian embassy in Damascus to convey their condolences for the martyrdom of Brigadier General Sayed Razi Mousavi, the top commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. The attendees condemned the heinous crime committed by the Israeli regime and expressed unwavering faith in the victory of the resistance.
This is a criminal act and an evidence of bankruptcy. When they failed in confronting the resistance, they resorted to assassinations. It is well known that their agenda is to target resistance leaders in Gaza, but they have failed so far. They have been unable to achieve any meaningful results except for killing innocent civilians.
I express my condolences and congratulations on behalf of the Syrian president for the martyrdom of Sayed Razi. The price of victory and resistance are these martyrs who join thousands of martyrs of the Syrian army and all resistance forces in Lebanon and Iraq. This is the fruit of the struggle and real work to restore our usurped rights.
In a heartfelt tribute, participants spoke highly of Commander Mousavi and his significant role as an official of logistical support for the resistance front, while the resistance leaders confirmed that his blood will not be in vain. Rather, it will inspire the peoples of the region to resist more than ever until the Israeli regime is fully defeated, along with its United States supporter.
As for us, the Islamic resistance in Iraq, by the permission of God, we will have a response. Our military operations in support of Gaza are ongoing. The assassination of the martyr commander Razi Mousavi aimed to cut off the supply chains and hinder the great achievements made by the Axis of Resistance in supporting Gaza.
One of the pillars of the Axis of Resistance, who dedicated his life to serving people and defending their rights, he left a great impact on the souls of those who knew him. Participants remembered him as a generous, humble, and kind-hearted man. With profound grief and resolute determination to seek justice, they expressed their unwavering confidence that Iran would retaliate against the Israeli vicious crime. Syrians and Iranians share the same grief today, along with all fighters of the resistance front, as martyr Sayed Razi Mousavi was not only a military advisor who defended Syria, but also an icon of humanity and heroism. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
With Christmas celebrations in Al-Quds and Bethlehem cancelled, the Christian Palestinians residing in Lebanon also have no reason to be joyous. Mass Christmas services have transformed into prayers of mourning. Nahida and Samar Antoun were killed by Israeli sniper fire in Gaza. They were killed as they took refuge in a monastery.
They were killed by Israeli sniper fire, and what we heard from the Pope is not true. It was not by mistake. No one is killed in Gaza by mistake. This is a Zionist policy, and they purposely kill everyone, especially the children and every Arab, no matter what their religion, because we are a thorn in their throat. But we will remain, and they will leave.
They started shelling the churches just like they shelled the mosques. We were first confident that when they go to the church, they will be safe. But sniper fire hit them in the heart of the church. So there is no safe haven in Gaza. We are not celebrating this year just like Al-Quds.
We are mourning all of Palestine's martyrs, not only our relatives.
Palestinian Christians in Lebanon stress that the Israeli regime does not differentiate between Muslims or Christians, since they are all with the resistance.
We salute the resistance in Gaza, Lebanon, Yemen, Iraq, and Syria, and we tell them not to stop. These racist Zionists are even worse than the Nazis. What they are doing is more heinous than what the Nazis did. If the Arabs want to forsake Al-Quds, fine. We are the ones who will liberate it with the efforts of our heroic resistance inside Palestine, and victory is very near.
Despite the sadness in the hearts of the grown-ups, they are attempting to put a smile on the faces of the children who also remember Gaza.
We're giving these gifts to the children of this camp since it's not their crime that the Zionist occupation is killing children in Palestine. We want to give them some joy as we have been doing for the last 5 years.
We do not feel there is a holiday, but we're trying to put some happiness in the hearts of children here while we remember that our children in Palestine are being killed every day. The Israelis do not differentiate between Muslim and Christian. It's a monster that was planted on our land, and it kills all people alike.
With tens of thousands already killed by the Israeli regime in Palestine, people at churches in Lebanon remember the oppressed people of Palestine and pray, may Christ be with them. For Palestinian Christians in Lebanon, this Christmas is an occasion to mourn rather than celebrate. As they remember their kin who were martyred in Gaza, their biggest wish of the year is that they may one day celebrate Christmas in their churches as they come back home to a free Palestine. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The Iranian Defense Ministry spokesman has warned that Israel will have to pay the price for assassinating a once senior military advisor in Syria, General Seyed Reza Mousavi. Brigadier General Reza Talaynik noted the revenge against Israel will be fulfilled at the proper time and place. Speaking at the press conference on Tuesday, the spokesman said the Zionist regime's move to assassinate Iran Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, Brigadier General Mousavi in Damascus, reveals the terrorist nature of Israel. He added that the murder is a clear violation of Syria's sovereignty.
This crime definitely deserves punishment. The Israelis must pay the price for their recent terrorist actions. Iran will give a smart and a strong response to the Israeli strike at the appropriate time and place, and in such a way that the Zionist regime's purposes in carrying out these attacks won't be fulfilled.
Brigadier General Seyed Reza Mousavi was assassinated in a missile strike on a neighborhood in Damascus. He was in charge of the resistance front's logistics in Syria. Mousavi was also comrade of IRGC's late commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated in a U.S. drone attack near Baghdad International Airport in 2020. The IRGC strongly condemned Mousavi's assassination, saying the occupying Israeli regime will pay for this crime.
The developments in the past 4 years following the assassination of General Soleimani show that our enemies, especially the United States, have obtained opposite results from such acts of terrorism. Over the past 4 years, the ideals and patterns of resistance grew in the region and even in the world. Contrary to the terrorist goal of the United States, the resistance front has gained more power than before. The most important issue in the region and the world is still the genocide in Gaza, and the failure and defeat of the Zionists has been revealed to the world, and the regime is going through a dark period.
Experts believe Iran Islamic Revolution Guards Corps is revered in West Asia for its key role in helping the Iraqi and Syrian armies eliminate the Daesh terror group. And now Israel has once again demonstrated its hostility toward the IRGC and its counter-terrorism campaign by assassinating one of its senior military advisors in Syria. Iranian officials believe that the recent Israeli crimes in the region, such as the Gaza War or the assassination of the Iranian commander in Syria, shows the continued weakness and failure of the Tel Aviv regime, which leads Israel to collapse and complete destruction. Saman Kujur, Tehran.
On October 7th, the Israeli regime launched brutal bombardment of the Gaza Strip, killing and maiming tens of thousands of innocent civilians. Palestinian journalists and media workers were no exception. The Israeli regime has so far killed more than 100 Palestinian journalists as well as dozens of their family members. According to Reporters Without Borders, Palestinian journalists have no safe refuge and no way of leaving the blockaded territory.
Every day, Zionist forces target journalists in Gaza, and if they cannot kill them, they kill their family members. The Zionist regime has killed scores of our colleagues along with their families. Tel Aviv wants to silence us and prevent us from exposing Israeli war crimes.
Over the course of the Israeli onslaught, dozens of Gazan journalists have also been reported missing, detained, or injured. Israeli forces have also targeted their media offices and homes.
My message to the international community is that we here, as a journalist, we didn't feel that we are safe. We are targeted, and every time we can be bombed with the Israeli occupation forces. So my message is that we have to be saved. We are doing our work. We are only covering the acts that Israeli made here in the Gaza Strip. So we are trying to get this message to the world.
Experts have dubbed the Israeli aggression since October 7th as the deadliest period for journalists covering military conflicts in more than three decades.
We were displaced from the Tel al-Hawa neighborhood in Gaza City to the house of our friend, the journalist Adel Zorob, in Rafah. He hosted us for 70 days, and a few days ago, my family was sleeping in the room close to his room, and an Israeli airstrike killed him along with several members of his family and my family.
Reporters Without Borders has described the Gaza Strip as the graveyard of journalists. Journalists in Gaza have been at the forefront of the campaign to expose Israeli crimes against innocent civilians. Experts say Palestinian journalists are paying the price for the international apathy toward Israeli war crimes. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually, and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willst, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
From Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marcia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Scenes like those from apocalyptic films are taking place in real time in Gaza every day, except that these scenes are not from a movie, but a living nightmare. This as the Israeli regime continues its genocide against the native Palestinian population, killing tens of thousands of people. Many in the world have had enough, and now South Africa has filed an application with the International Court of Justice to charge the Israelis with genocide. We're going to take a look at this on the Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Fadid Sack, scholar, writer, and board member, Africa for Palestine, Johannesburg. And Daniel Shaw, academic and commentator out of New York. Thank you both for being with me. Well, let's start it off in Johannesburg. And Farid, why do you think your country has been the first one to take such a step against Israel?
Well, South Africa is a country that has a significant reputation for having lived under and died under a regime of the brutalization of people and the separation of people from other people on the basis of their racial an ethnic identity. But not only that, South Africa has, to however limited an extent, we have successfully fought the scourge of state racism, state apartheid in South Africa, and we have been able to forge a democratic country. The fact that we have arrived at a democratic country, however, does not make us oblivious to, firstly, those who were in the trenches with us in the struggle against apartheid, but more significantly, those who are undergoing life and death under a regime far worse than what we in South Africa had experienced. And so in some ways, it is only natural that South Africa should have taken the leadership in this role. It remains, however, remarkable in a world where countries aren't interested really in the struggles of other peoples. Countries generally privilege their own national or security interests entirely over that of any other issue. And so I think it is commendable that South Africa, the government of South Africa, the vast majority of the electorate and political parties in South Africa, that they have taken this decision that doesn't benefit our country in any way, but continues to entrench our legitimacy as a people that recognizes, deplores, and acts against racism, okay, and in this case, genocide.
Indeed. Well, Danny, the ICJ is overseen by the United Nations, and both Israel and South Africa are part of the UN. Do you think that the ICJ will really initiate a case against the Israelis?
The ICJ, unfortunately, in this case, is really paper law with no teeth in order to enforce this. I think it's clear to the world that what Israel, with full U.S. and Western backing, has been carrying out since 1948, does amount to a genocidal campaign of displacement, humiliation, and ethnic cleansing against the native Palestinian people. I don't think that's much of a debate. Now culminating in this 86 days of horrific violence against 2.3 million civilians. But for the Israeli war machine and for the Biden cabinet, there are no Palestinian civilians. Everybody is guilty. Everybody is Hamas. They've intentionally overinflated the capacity of Hamas to inflict damage on the occupying Israeli power. Wherever we go in the United States now, there's billboards saying that Hamas is our problem too. So this is an informational war. And because of the censorship and the outright fascism that exists here, the U.S. public has bought into this genocidal campaign of violence against the native Palestinian people. But more and more people are pushing back, particularly youth. There's more and more studies and polls coming out from the New York Times and from different universities showing that Biden's popularity is decreasing by the day. Most polls now have Donald Trump as the leader for president next year. So things are definitely in flux here and across the world.
Yeah, indeed. Well, Farid, your perspective, you heard what our guest in New York said. What about you? How binding do you think a decision would be for the Israeli regime? And could the United States be also charged as an accomplice? What would it take to get things to that level?
Well, firstly, the International Court of Justice, or the World Court in The Hague, as Danny points out, their jurisdiction is limited. So it is one of the institutions of the UN itself, and it gives advisory opinions. But in this case, the South African government has asked for a more intermediate intervention, given the fact that the genocide is ongoing. The problem is that the World Court of Justice doesn't have any executionary powers. It doesn't have a police force. It doesn't have any prosecutorial authority. And its only consequences is the quote-unquote moral sanction, But if any other steps are taken by them, even if they find against Israel, as one would hope that they do, it would be up to the Security Council to give effect to that judgment. And the Security Council, as we know, is bounded by this sanctions power of some of the, what they would like to imagine, some of the great powers in the world. And the United States, as always, will find itself on the other side of history and vote against any actions against Israel. However, I don't think that one should underestimate the symbolic value of a sanction coming from the World Court of Justice, if it were to come. And of course, nothing that comes can ever come soon enough for the Palestinian people.
Right. Well, on one hand, it seems like we're back at square one, Danny, because it all goes back to the UN, and we know with the veto power. But as Farid has said, he feels that it could be effective, at least some type of censuring in general. But your perspective, you know, South African President Mr. Ramaphosa has compared Israel's policy in Gaza and the West Bank to the apartheid regime of South Africa. Your thoughts, Zanny? I mean, are there similarities, or is it just so much worse than what we ever saw in South Africa? How do you see it?
My professor, Edward Said, in 1996, actually made a point that stayed with me. He was doing a comparison of apartheid in Palestine, South Africa, and in other countries. And the South African apartheid regime always needed native labor to work the mines and the incredible riches from the subsoil of South Africa, whereas the Israelis used to allow Gazans and Palestinians in the West Bank and the occupied territories to cross into 48 or quote-unquote Israel to work for them. But nowadays, it seems like less and less they're offering those permits, really permits of humiliation, to work for your occupier, for your colonizer. Even within Israeli society, as closed and fascistic as it is against the Palestinians, there was a headline today in Haaretz newspaper, the liberal newspaper out of Tel Aviv, where they themselves were questioning Israel's measuring of the caloric intake needed within Gaza to keep people at least barely alive from completely starving. These are all war crimes. These are all crimes of genocide. Just because Israel is backed by the big bad colonial bully, the United States and the collective West, all of them have gone to Tel Aviv to completely rubber stamp Netanyahu's horrific genocidal violence. But more and more people across the world are questioning. So as worthless as the United Nations is in terms of actual concrete actions, it does begin to summarize world opinion. World opinion, that is the people of the world, are squarely on the side of the colonized, of the occupied, of the Palestinians. But again, it is the quote-unquote collective West, the imperialist powers. They need Israel. Israel functions as their battle ram since 1948 to strike out against Syrian sovereignty, Iranian sovereignty, the sovereignty of the Middle East and West Asia. And that's what they're searching for. They want a massive war. They're looking for a massive war against Iran. And that's really what's behind this suffocation, starvation, dehydration, and genocidal campaign against the Palestinians.
Interesting point. So you think that the goal is actually to pull Iran into it all?
That's certainly a big piece of it. And every day the Israelis brag about striking Aleppo and bombing Damascus. I mean, is it 1492? Is it 1620 where these European descendant colonial powers can just do whatever they want?
Well, it sure seems like it. It doesn't seem like we've come very far, even though we're at the end of 2023. We're almost watching 3 months of genocide in real time take place. So it is a very sad state of affairs indeed for the world. Now, Farid, as the regime continues to inflict pain on the Palestinians, we have more accusations now about that the bodies of Palestinians are actually being returned with organs missing, that the Israeli regime, that they're actually taking the organs of Palestinians, or perhaps mutilating and violating the bodies. Your thoughts on this in general?
Well, I mean, it's not something that one can have a thought on. I mean, and I have no evidentiary that I have looked at to actually verify this. Although, quite frankly, I wouldn't put it past them to descend to this level of barbarity. But it's important to say that I have nothing in front of me to indicate any kind of evidentiary distinctions of this. But if I may quickly distinct into your early question about the apartheid analogy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the embarrassing thing for South Africans is that for more than 30 years, we have been saying, any of us who have been to that part of the world, we've been saying that Palestinian existence or death in the shadow of Zionism is far worse than what we have ever experienced under apartheid. Now, we've said this for the last 30 years already. I'm a veteran of the South African liberation struggle. I've been to that part of the world nearly 10 times, and I've said this consistently. And the embarrassing part is that what we said in the last 30 years, Palestinians and those in solidarity with them still feel the need to refer to apartheid as what they're experiencing. Now, if for 30 years we've said that it's much worse, you can well imagine the apartheid regime never engaged in the kind of barbarism, the deep descent into inhumanity that the Zionist regime has been capable of. As my fellow panelist says, South Africa had never wished for the death of all black people in South Africa. South Africa sought ways of controlling them and of reducing them to kind of subhuman beings, but they never imagined a country without blacks. The other major problem with Zionism, which makes it nearly intractable and a force that can never be at peace with other people, is Zionism regards itself as a home for all the Jews all the time in the world. White South Africa never imagined itself a magnet point for all other white races to come into South Africa. And if they did, where would black people have been able to go? And so Zionism presents a far more intractable problem for any person that seeks a lasting solution to the occupation and the dispossession of the Palestinian people.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, well, Daniel, back to the part that I was mentioning to our guests about the organ theft, because this is not something new. This is actually, these accusations have been made in the past by Palestinians, and of course, they have become increasingly more during this genocide when the Israelis have taken bodies, sometimes returning them, sometimes not, but witnesses now are saying that organs are missing. Is organ theft considered a crime you think that the ICJ could also follow up on?
Yeah, for a U.S. audience to hear this jarring headline, they would potentially try to dismiss it as a conspiracy theory. I have seen these articles. Colonialism and white supremacy have a history of medical experimentations on black bodies, on Guatemalan bodies. Certainly the Tuskegee prison experiment is among the most infamous and nefarious. I don't think we can discount anything that the Zionists would do to the Palestinians, because the Zionists have never recognized Palestinian humanity. And of course, their rebuttal is then, well, the Palestinians don't see us as human. Well, how are the colonized supposed to see you as human if all you've ever done is shown them disdain and genocidal disdain? So I think this question of organ theft, we have to continue to expose the true sociology of Zionist society. What percentage of Israelis actually see the native Palestinians as human beings? How come so many Israelis never have had any actual human interactions with Palestinians and act like the Palestinians don't exist, that they can be swept under the proverbial colonial rug? So I think this is a story. I've received calls from Cairo and beyond to investigate this further. And this is deeply distressing. But if they're willing to starve, dehydrate, and carpet bomb 2.3 million civilians, dismissing every last child, 1.1 million children, as Hamas terrorists, why would it? Why they don't respect the Palestinian body politic and much less Palestinian mental health and the Palestinian physical body. I mean, what Palestinian is not deeply traumatized? And I'm not just talking within the largest ghetto in the world, Gaza. I'm talking about the 15.3 million Palestinians across the world who have to watch this on Instagram or wherever we're not censored. How can they sleep at night? So in the spirit of what Fareed is saying, I think it's fair to say the Palestinians are the most traumatized nation on earth.
Well, Fareed, looking at Israeli regime leaders now, besides actual genocide taking place, we see the various statements that have been made, outright genocidal statements, that they're not even trying to hide their intentions. They're saying it needs to be flattened, it needs to be wiped out. I mean, all of these, of course, are also proof of the intention behind what is going on. Do you think at the end of the day, whether we're talking about the ICJ or elsewhere, that the Israeli regime is going to be held responsible for these crimes in a court of law?
The emphasis in defining genocide is on the question of intent. And to the extent that people from the prime minister down to members of his cabinet have expressed the intention to destroy the Palestinian people. And of course, sometimes they make a distinction between Hamas, they make a distinction between Islamic Jihad and Hezbollah and so on. But just beneath the camouflaging and explicitly, I mean, when Netanyahu refers to the Palestinians as Amalek, you know, the biblical enemies of the Jewish people that have to be destroyed completely. So there has been sufficient declarations of intent from enough ministers and public figures and the prime minister in Israel to indicate this intent to eliminate the Palestinian people. And of course, the Palestinian people they're really non-people for the Zionists. It's part of this old colonial narrative, you know, where we enter a place and we discover a place as if there weren't human beings living there before. So in the more kind of quote-unquote subtle languages of colonialism, this is common. However, nobody in the recent history have been so explicit in the intention to commit genocide, and more horrific, nobody in the recent history of humankind have done so with the support and the explicit support, not just verbal, but actual military support to complete this project of genocide of theirs, as the Israelis have been getting away from, largely from the United States of America, but not just from the United States of America, many other countries in the global north. So yes, they will ultimately be found guilty in the court of history. Will that be some consolation for the Palestinians? No. We need the perpetrators of those crimes to be stopped now, because they're still busy doing it, and then, after stopping them, then bringing them to justice.
Indeed. Dan, you only have 30 seconds. When we look at this whole situation, and we started off with the ICJ, and basically it's part of the UN, and at the end of the day, the U.S. can veto it, does it just point to a situation that we really need a whole new world order in order to stop this madness?
That is correct. It's only the rise of multipolarity. It's only the rise of global South unity led by China and the Bolivarian camp, Venezuela, Cuba, the Russians, the Iranians, the Arab unity. It's only a new world order. It's only a world where there truly is some sense of justice and equality that can begin to push back on U.S. imperial designs. It's the U.S. that has weaponized Israel to do all of its dirty work since 1948. This has nothing to do with Judaism or Islam and everything to do with white supremacy and colonialism.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with me. Fadi Disak, scholar, writer, and board member, Africa for Palestine out of Johannesburg. Daniel Shaw, academic and commentator out of New York. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
A new poll shows that a growing share of U.S. voters say their country is spending too much on Kyiv. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT wrote, Americans are increasingly turning against funding Ukraine's conflict with Russia. Two recent opinion polls have shown. Partisan divisions have also had a serious impact on attitudes towards the provision of aid in the United States. In a survey conducted by the Financial Times and the Michigan Ross Business School, 48% of Americans said they believed their nation was spending too much on military and financial aid to Kyiv. Only 27% said the amount was right, and 11% believed the United States was not spending enough. The British newspaper reported the results recently. GOP voters were the most likely to say the U.S. assistance to Ukraine was excessive, with 65% of Republicans giving that answer, compared to 52% of independents and 32% of Democrats. The shifting attitudes were also reflected in a Pew survey on the same issue, the results of which the pollster released recently. In that study, 31% of respondents said the U.S. was spending too much, compared to 29% who supported the current level, 18% who considered it not sufficient, and 22% who said they were not sure. Recently, senators from the Republican opposition blocked the White House request for over $110 billion in additional foreign security spending, of which more than $60 billion was earmarked for Ukraine. The administration of President Joe Biden has argued that if the United States stopped funding Ukraine, American troops would have to fight Russians directly. He insisted that Moscow would attack NATO after beating Ukraine, prompting a rebuke from the Kremlin. Just 33% of Americans surveyed in the Pew poll said Russia was a major threat to the United States, while 34% called it a minor threat, and 10% said it posed no threat at all. Democrats were more likely than Republicans to perceive Russia as a major threat, with a 40% to 27% gap. Both surveys were conducted online between December 5th and 6th, and between November 27th and December 3rd, respectively. The Financial Times Michigan Ross poll reflects the opinions of 1,004 registered voters and has a margin of error plus minus 3.1 percentage points. The Pew survey involved 5,203 people and has a margin of error of plus minus 1.8 percentage points. According to Tehran Times, as the United States makes announcements on a regular basis for new military aid packages for the war in Ukraine, it is the American households who are funding the war through tax money. Many critics say the United States has waged a proxy war against Russia, but Ukrainian civilians and troops are sacrificing their lives to realize the American goals. It has been widely estimated that the amount of money Washington has spent on the war has left a hole of around $900 in the pockets of each American household. Some estimates indicate that this figure is approximately $1,000 so far for every American family. President Joe Biden repeatedly stating that the United States will support Ukraine as long as it takes, the Americans are wise enough to know what this actually means for them. Americans growing increasingly frustrated at the expenses when a long list of urgent domestic problems, including health care, fragile and aging infrastructure, gun violence, racism, rising inflation, expenses, and other issues are being neglected. This public anger has been picked up on by various political nominees for the 2024 presidential election, drawing fears back in Kiev that the new administration in the White House could end the flow of military assistance. That will continue until the new administration, if Biden loses the election, wage another proxy conflict elsewhere in the world. The exact amount of money that the United States has sent to Ukraine is far from transparent, with the Biden administration using different terminology at different times to define where the funds are coming from. However, Polls and reports show Americans are seeking clarity themselves. In the first 10 months alone, since the conflict erupted in February 2022, Congress had already approved more than $113 billion in military assistance and other forms of aid to support the Ukrainian government and allied nations. The total sum being sent to Ukraine is believed to be much higher. Opponents of the war argue that this money can go a long way to serving a large number of domestic issues plaguing the lives of ordinary Americans. Publicly, Washington has announced several ways in which direct military supplies and financial aid are being provided to Ukraine. These include presidential drawdown authority, sending existing U.S. weapons and ammunition, and then paying U.S. arms manufacturers to replace them. The Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative. This is where the U.S. administration pays private contractors for training and supplies. On top of these two, Washington also has a foreign military financing program. The U.S. administration pays to stock up the weapons cache of NATO allies that have sent their own weapons to Ukraine.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.